This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
Well, good morning. It's good to see a lot of people here because I guess that means there's a lot of needy children. And we're doing this workshop because we care a lot about children who need help. And we care about it partly because we're teachers, but even more so because it's a personal story for us. Our son is dyslexic, and that's what makes it personal. And my wife is going to tell our story, our journey with our son.
Well, I like an interactive audience. So how many of you think you have dyslexic children in your classroom? Very good. Okay, how many of you have no clue what dyslexia is? Okay, so we're all sort of familiar with dyslexia. Dyslexia is the first part of our talk today, and that's a good portion of our story. I guess our story started in 2011 when our son was born, but we didn't realize the story that was going to be written for his life. At eight, there was some patterning issues, inability to catch a ball with two hands. We kind of just go like this to catch it, and we can't quite catch the ball, and ambidextrous, writing with either hand, whatever we wanted to. And we had been exposed to some neurophysiological therapy, and so we did that for 2 years. And if you don't know anything about it, it's very grueling. We couldn't have done it without each other. It is 30 to 45 minutes of patterning with your child every evening.
After they figure out the pattern. At first, it's more like an hour and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
Teach them.
So very grueling. We did that for 2 years every evening. And we thought, we think we see some difference. We think we've made some improvement. We hope this is it. Now we're good to go, ready for kindergarten. Well, the class got into kindergarten, got to Christmas, and were not doing well at all. And this was not just our son, but this was the entire class. And the teacher said, well, I really hate this curriculum. And so we said, okay, there's another curriculum used by a school close by, and we're pretty sold on that curriculum. And so we said, well, let's use that curriculum. Switch curriculums in December. Started to see some improvement, but by first grade, they weren't quite through that curriculum, so we got some extra tutors in, and by first grade, thought, okay, we think we've got it now. We think these guys are ready to go. But by second grade, we were like, something's still not quite right. And we were really praying about what the next answer was, because phonics, they just, in spite of all the teaching aids, phonics still didn't stick. And so we were praying, and a horse and buggy neighbor of mine needed a ride to the eye doctor. And on the way to the eye doctor, she started talking about the trouble that her children have had and why they use this eye doctor, and that he does vision therapy. And I said, well, can I talk to someone here and ask some questions? And she said, sure. So we wound up taking our son to that eye doctor for vision therapy. Now, we didn't have money to enroll in the program where they go like three times a week for several hours. It's several thousand dollars. But you can also do it with prisms in the lenses and changing lenses every 3 months. And you can get the eyes to do basically the same thing that vision therapy would have done. So we thought, good, we're good to go. Some improvement in the classroom, some improvement in retention, and we thought, all right, we'll be all right. We had a good third grade and fourth grade teacher. He kind of bumbled along, and we thought, okay, I said, well, I struggled in school, so, it's genetic, He gets it from me, poor child, doesn't have his daddy's brains, Oh, well, we'll be all right. But we hit fifth grade, and by fall PTF, we realized we had hit a brick wall. And so I said to the teacher, okay, look, I'm resigned to lay down my pride, and we will just have a child that repeats a grade. That's not the end of the world, right? It's okay. You know, we'll be okay with this. And he said, actually, I don't think that's going to solve anything. Very, very wise teacher. Very, very thankful for that little bit of advice. And what that did was that pushed us to say, well, if he's failing, repeat isn't the option, then what? So, well, let me say this. His spelling grades were coming home at 38%. And we would study spelling Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, twice an evening. We got out Scrabble letters. We're going to spell, put these words together, hands-on. Maybe he's kinesthetic. And Friday, 38%. He didn't retain anything. Practice all the way to school with Dad, 30-minute drive. Nothing worked. And so I did what a lot of us do when we're in trouble. My husband went to a board meeting, and I put the kids to bed, and I got my computer, and I went to Google. And I just typed in, my child can't spell, what should I do? That is literally what I typed into the Google search engine. And Susan Barton system was the first thing to pop up. Isn't that a God thing? I now realize that we were just kind of naive. Apparently there's other Mennonite schools that use it, and we just didn't know about it. I sat in rapt attention for the next, this was about 10 o'clock when I did the Google search, and at midnight I forced myself to shut the lid and stop listening to her lectures. And the next day, as soon as the kids were off to school and my babysitting children had arrived and breakfast was over, I got the laptop out again. It's 4.5 hours of listening, but you, I can't describe to you how spellbound I was. It was like my child. They were describing my child. Like, wow, and hope. There's so much hope. Like, this is not impossible. He can actually excel in school if we get the right kind of help. And long story short, we listened to the lectures, and we called Susan Barton, and she said, yeah, I think I actually have a tutor in your relative area. It was about an hour away. And so we went there, and he was diagnosed with dyslexia, a little bit of ADD, and just a touch of autism. Not much. But we got some answers for some of the strange behaviors that our family pediatrician said, oh, you know, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it. Don't know what that comes from, but don't stress over it. We realized some of it was autism. But then our professional
evaluator,
thank you, also recommended some herbal supplements. So what we did was we hit everything full force. We started with, she recommended DHA, which is an omega-3, to feed the brain. So we did that. We did, she recommended glutathione, but you cannot buy glutathione, just buy glutathione. So we got some pills that cleanse the liver. The liver is what produces glutathione. So if you cleanse the liver, rid it of any toxins, it helps glutathione to be produced in the brain, which helps your brain to function better. And then we also put him on some focus attention. This is all through Nature Sunshine. It's just herbal stuff. So we did that. We hit that immediately. And then found out that the horse and buggy Mennonite school at the bottom of our driveway had a dyslexic program, and our babysitter was the teacher. And so we hired her, and she did therapy from January to May, and then she got married, and now our school, we've worked and gotten a teacher hired for our school, and she's working with him through the summer, and will begin full-time here in the fall. And I just want to show you the difference in his grades. He's given us permission to show you his report card. Okay, some of the grades, not a lot of difference. You'll see in Bible, not a lot of difference. But the biggest one, spelling, 52 to 100. Now, I do want to point something out there. These grades reflect the tutor's grades. But to make him still feel a part of the classroom, we did not stop the spelling tests that went on every Friday. He was just supposed to do them to the best of his ability. But his teacher sent home the spelling tests, and he had 100%. So, phenomenal. Another one is, let's see, where are we here? It's a little hard for me to see. 66 in science to 80. And 78 in English to 90. Now there was a drop again that quarter. I'm not sure what that was about. 76 in reading to 99 and 97. So we felt like, I think we're on the right track now. And his self-esteem is worth more than words can say. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to share.
Just a note on his self-esteem. He grew up thinking he's just dumb. I mean, look at his report card. Nearly failing reading. At our school, 66% is the lowest grade you can get and still pass. So he's nearly failing reading. History, barely passing. Spelling, he's not passing. And it's embarrassing to a child when you're having class and we're going to read in class. So we'll start here and we'll read around, and it gets to be his turn and he can't read and he's stumbling along trying to figure out the words and you just feel dumb. He doesn't feel that way anymore. I want to talk a little bit about dyslexia, just a little bit about what it is. The National Institutes of Health has actually been studying dyslexia for over 30 years. So they have a relatively long span of studies that they've done, and they've found that approximately 20% of children, of people, have some level of dyslexia. So I don't know how many people are here. They told me 79 signed up for this workshop. So if there's 80 people here, what's 20% of 80? 16. So that means that 16 of you probably have some level of dyslexia. Maybe. But of your students, approximately 20%. And some people will think that boys tend to have dyslexia more than girls. That's not true. It's pretty much equal numbers of boys and girls that are affected by dyslexia. Dyslexia is actually the leading cause of reading failure and school dropout in the United States. They've done studies among juvenile offenders. Reading failure is the most commonly shared characteristic among juvenile offenders. And you can imagine if you grew up just feeling like you're just dumb. And a lot of these children get made fun of in school. You would tend to give up. And some people think that eventually they'll outgrow it. If we just let them go, they'll outgrow it. And that's not true either. Adults still struggle with dyslexia. In fact, one of the other boys at our school that I'm pretty sure has dyslexia, he's not been officially diagnosed, but I'm 95% sure he has dyslexia. I was talking with his dad about it, and his dad said, yeah, I think I have it too. And I know his dad pretty well. His dad served on our school board for quite a while. I think, too, his dad has dyslexia. He can't read. He can't spell. I'm talking about the dad. And he knows it, and he feels dumb, too. But you don't have to be that way. So what is dyslexia? If we break the word down, the first part of the word is dys, D-Y-S, and that's just a Latin prefix that means difficulty with or impaired. Lexia is the Latin word for language. So dyslexia literally means difficulty with language. Okay, so it's it's a language problem, not a reading problem. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, dyslexia affects oral language in speaking. People who talk about eating biscotti. And I've had students that said that, and I would correct them and say, well, it's actually spaghetti. Yeah, that's what I said. Biscotti. Or aminal. Or, if you're talking about the Bible, they get to the fifth book of the Bible is Deuteronomy. And again, I've had students that say it that way, and I would gently point out that it's actually Deuteronomy. Yeah, that's what I said, Deuteronomy. So, speaking, but it's also the auditory processing. They can't hear the difference. Even though I corrected them, I said, no, it's not Deuteronomy, it's Deuteronomy. Yeah, that's what I said. No, it's not what they said. They can't hear the difference. And so they have trouble distinguishing sounds. So they might talk about their math homework. Instead of math homework, it's math. And if you would try to correct them, they would think that's what they said. Or they might talk about being frustrated or frustrated about something they can't do. So it's an oral language problem, but this also affects their auditory processing, being able to distinguish sounds. Yes, it does affect their reading, and it affects their spelling and written expression as well. But one other thing about dyslexia, it is an inherited condition. It is. And our son has dyslexia, and after we realized that it's an inherited thing, we got to thinking about our families. And it is in our families. Again, it's not been officially diagnosed, but it's there. I have a brother. Can't read. I mean, he can read, but not very well. Can't spell. He's not dumb. He kind of grew up thinking he was dumb, too. But he's not. I know he's not. My wife has a sister. Can't read much at all. Can't write very well. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. It is an inherited condition. There's a myth that left-handed people are the only ones that get dyslexia. If you're left-handed, you're more likely to have dyslexia. Well, that's not really true either. The people that have dyslexia, half of them are left-handed, half of them are right-handed. So, that's a myth. But part of dyslexia is what we call dysgraphia. What is dysgraphia? Well, again, we have the same first part of the word is D-Y-S. So it's difficulty with. Graphia is writing or letter forms. And so dysgraphia is difficulty with forming letters, difficulty with writing. And we're going to show you some examples of dysgraphia. But let me just illustrate one thing. Part of dysgraphia is often accompanied with unusual pencil grips. You might see a student holding their pen with it's what we call full fist grip. Or it might be a three-finger fist grip. Or a two-finger. Or something like that. All kinds of ways you can hold your pencil. And they're doing that, not because it necessarily feels better, but they're trying hard. They know what the letter's supposed to look like, but they just have trouble making it look right. And so they're trying. And we have a little boy at our school. I'll show you a sample of his writing in a little bit here. He does that. He does not consistently hold his pen one way. He's trying all kinds of different ways to try to get things to work right. It's frustrating for him. And he tends to just give up. Sometimes they hold it so tightly that their hand starts to cramp up. Or you see them with the backward, I can hardly do it, but the knuckle bends backward because they're just holding their pencil so tight. And I remember in school, my teacher used to sometimes just walk around and kind of walk up to us and without letting us know it, just try to grab the pen out of our hand or the pencil. And I didn't know why, but maybe she knew something about dysgraphia, I don't know. But if you're holding your pen so tight that I can't pull it out, that's a problem. You shouldn't have to hold it that tightly to write. So, dysgraphia. Sometimes they'll write with unusual starting and ending points in their sentences. Sometimes they don't, and part of that has to do with capitalization. They don't understand that a sentence has to begin with a capital letter or supposed to have periods in it. They'll just write and just write. And you have to try to discern where the end of the sentence was supposed to be. Sometimes they have trouble getting the letters to sit on the horizontal lines. It's a sample of our son's handwriting when he was 9 years old. You see how the letters are some of them are above the line, some are below. The very first letter, the I, it's up above the line it's supposed to be on. Some of them go below the line. Here you see up and then down again. I don't know if you can read what he wrote there or not. I got a bat, capital A for there, and it doesn't need to be capitalized. I got a bat and a ball. I love them. I got them from my grandpa, Paul. Grandpa, he's trying to figure out how this would be spelled, for my birthday. I want a glove for my birthday and I couldn't figure that one out, but my wife was able to discern it. Bat catcher's mask. The end. He's 9 years old. He shouldn't have had to spell this word, right? The, it's a common word. I mean, how many times do you see the word the? How many times has he written the word the by the time he's 9 years old? But he didn't spell it right. And that's common. For a child with dyslexia, it's common for him. You know, simple, common words like that that they use all the time, and they get the letters mixed up. They can't. They don't even know how to spell them. This is the little boy I was talking about at our school that holds his pen all different kinds of ways to try to get it to work right. This is at the end of first grade. Looks like maybe a child coming into kindergarten. But even then, I'd be going, wow, they really need to work on their writing skills. But this is at the end of first grade, and we actually didn't save any of his handwriting samples. So I talked to his mom and asked if we could get a sample of his handwriting for this workshop, and she was quite happy to do that. So she had him sit down, and she told him, now do your best. I want you to do your best. And so he worked very hard trying to get this. And you can see he started on the alphabet up there, didn't like what he was doing, so he scribbled it out and started over down here. But A, B, C, D, E, F's not capitalized. G, small h, a small I. Random like that. And it gets down here, X, Y, Z, real tiny. So different size of letters. The spacing's not the same. The numbers up there, he started out pretty good. 1, 2, 3, a little skewed and a little bit below the line. The 4 is way below the line. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 is the 1 and the 0 squished together. But he worked really hard. And I'm sure he did because I've watched him at school. I've helped him at school. And the poor boy worked so hard to try to get the letters to look right. Part of dysgraphia is the unusual spacing. You can see a little bit of that here with his letters, just unusual spacing. As you can imagine, for a child like this, if I would put something up here and tell you to copy it, and you had dysgraphia, it'd be terribly hard work. Usually what they do, they look up there, A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B. Okay, I got that. C, D, 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 C, D. And you might even hear them kind of under their breath muttering the letters. all they can do is grab one or two at a time, put it on their paper. Next one or two letters. And it's frustrating for them because they know they're way behind everybody else. Everybody else, all right, we done? Oh, wait, she's not done yet. And hopefully the teacher, you know, doesn't do that, but yet they know it. They're not dumb. And so they're constantly looking up, grabbing one or two letters, putting it on their paper. Cursive writing? Oh, my. For a lot of these children, we don't have any samples of cursive writing. I wish we did, but they can't begin to master the cursive writing. The curves, beyond their ability for a lot of them. Talk about this a little bit, but they tend to write everything as one long sentence with no punctuation anywhere. They just keep writing because they don't know where the end of the sentence is supposed to be, and so they just keep going, and you have to discern where the periods are supposed to be and the commas and everything else. But they don't know. Sometimes their handwriting is nearly illegible. And we have some more samples here. Again, this is our son, 9 years old. We are making a piñata. I love making piñatas. And notice he didn't even spell piñata the same way both times. Right now, and we're not that southern, but right now, Ty and Colin are doing it. No period. I'm doing it with Jarrell. The end. Again, our son, 9 years old. I love soccer. I do just plain great. I win all the time. Robbie, our younger son, always this word. It's supposed to be always. How do you spell always? I don't know. Just something. Always loses. L-U-S-I, loses. I also like hockey. I always lose. Robbie always, didn't spell the word the same way there, always wins. I also love basketball. I always win. Robbie always loses. Don't know how true that is, but keep that up there a little bit. Again, you see the letters coming below the line. Some of them are above the line. Having trouble keeping his letters sitting where they're supposed to be. This was when he was 11. A little note he wrote to me on a napkin, stuck it in my lunchbox. I love you. Thank you for having devotions after every supper time. Thank you for helping me with my homework and out of space. But no hyphen or anything, just put the letter on the next line. Thank you for helping me when you found, how do you spell that word? Something, found, is what it's supposed to be, but you can see he was having trouble knowing how to spell it. Found that I had dyslexia. But you see, he's got a B instead of a D. He's having trouble with flipping there. And he put a question mark below it because he was not sure how to spell it. He knew he probably wasn't right, but he tried. And I'm not sure if that's a self-portrait or me or what. But so just some samples there of handwriting and the struggle that they have with handwriting. They also have trouble with phonemic awareness. Now, what's phonemic awareness? Well, you might not know what it is, but it's an absolutely essential pre-reading skill. If you don't have phonemic awareness, you're not going to be able to read. Phonemic awareness has to do with the ability to distinguish sounds in words, spoken words. being able to distinguish and manipulate sounds. So, for instance, a child with dyslexia probably wouldn't be able to do this. If I would ask, what sounds do you hear in the word hot? They don't know. It's just a word. But you probably, hopefully, can tell that there's hot, hot. Three sounds in there. Or, what's the last sound in the word map? They wouldn't know. Or you could say, what word would be left if the k sound were taken away from cat? They don't know. They can't distinguish the individual sounds in the word. Or, do pen and pipe start with the same sound? Pen and pipe. They don't know. How many sounds do you hear in the word cake? Cake. What word would you have if you changed the in hot to puh? They don't know. They can't distinguish the sounds. What word would you have if you put these sounds together? S-a-t. And you might even be able to get them. You point out those letters and say, okay, what sound does this letter make? S. Okay, what does this one? A. What's this one? T. Okay, put them together now. Make the word. They can't do it. They can sound. They know. They may have picked up. You know, learned by now that S makes a sound and A makes the generally a sound, and T makes the T sound. But they can't blend them. Rhyming. They don't know how to rhyme words because they can't. They can't distinguish the individual sounds. And so they can't just understand the different sounds, and therefore they don't know the relationship between letters and the sounds they represent in words. And so they're lost. You tell them to sound out a word, they have no clue how to do it. They just can't do it. And the little boy that I showed you at the end of first grade, I showed you a sample of his handwriting. We had one of our staff members that would try to work with him sometimes, and she would try to get him to sound out words. Just sound it out. And he would try. He would try so hard, but he couldn't get it. He just can't do it. And he would get frustrated. And so would she sometimes. What they do, they go by the shape of a word. What's the word? Can't hear you.
Bake.
Good. Okay. One tall, short, tall, short. Memorize that shape. Looks like this. And it starts with a B. We can remember that, okay? So if you see a word with that shape, it starts with a B, it's probably bake. Can you think of any other words that would have that shape that start with a B? Bike. Bail. Bait. So, you're in trouble. You have to guess. You see this word, it starts with a B, it's got that shape, you have to guess which one it might be. And what they often do is, they'll look at the context. So they might read it and kind of skip over that word, but look at the context. Okay, and some of the words that I do know, it's probably bake. So we'll guess that's bake. And then you start, so you teach them this word, and then you say, we're going to add some suffixes. You've completely changed the shape of the word. They're not going to recognize that as having anything to do with this word. The shape is completely different. You have the tall, the short, the tall, but then too short, and then a one that drops down below the line. They have no clue. Or baked. Doesn't look at all. I mean, the shape's similar, but they're not going to recognize it as having anything to do with that. Or bakes. Now you got two short ones at the end. And so you can see how they're not going to know how to read these words. We have to be, they have to be able to distinguish the sounds. They have to have that phonemic awareness before they can begin to read. And before they can begin phonics, because phonics instruction is not going to make any sense to them if they can't hear the sounds, distinguish the sounds. There is a free test for phonemic awareness. Maybe at the end of the session I'll put it up on the whiteboard there, the website where you can go to get that free test. Spelling, we talked a little bit about spelling. Spelling's far worse than reading form. They might be able to memorize Monday's spelling list by Friday and do okay on the test. Maybe our son couldn't. They might be able to do that, but you give them that same test Monday morning, it's not there. They don't know it. And they continually misspell high-frequency words like they, the, what, where, does, because, even though you go over and over and over and over with them. It doesn't stick. They can't get it. They have directionality issues, left-right confusion. They say that a common saying in dyslexic households is, it's on the left. No, the other left. And that's why they're BD confused. Where's that slide with the napkin? Again, it's dyslexia. He could have probably distinguished that first sound, but he wrote a B. So it's left-right confusion. One points to the left, one points to the right. Which one is it? Can't remember. They'll often start math problems on the wrong side, or they want to carry a number the wrong way. Sometimes it's up-down confusion. So B and P. You just take this B and flip it down, you have a P. I have trouble distinguishing. Or MW, DQ, N and U. You get up-down confusion. And of course, that also carries over into confusion about directionality words like first, last, before, after, over, under, next, previous. They don't know what that means. Or even directionality in time, yesterday, tomorrow. Sometimes that confuses them. Another way it shows up is in rote memorization of non-meaningful facts, like multiplication tables. They can't memorize that. They can't even memorize a list of spelling words, let alone memorize a multiplication table. The days of the week, the months of the year, science facts like the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second, or the boiling point of water is 212 degrees Fahrenheit. They can't remember that. History facts, dates, names, places. It's not there. They might be able to tell you kind of what happened in the story, history lesson that you had, but they can't remember the guy's name, or when it was, where it was. So it shows up in the memory of non-meaningful facts like that. Math difficulties, amazingly, they're often gifted in math. Because people with dyslexia actually have more brain than the rest of us. They have the right side of their brain is about 10% larger than normal, whatever normal is. Well, and because of that, somehow these people can see in 3D. I can't do that. My wife loves to decorate and redecorate our house and rearrange the furniture, and she'll talk about if we put this over here and that over there, and I always say, just do it, and I'll tell you if I like it after it's done, because I can't picture that. But they can. They think in pictures. And they think they see pictures. And so they're often gifted at math because their three-dimensional visualization skills help them see math concepts more quickly and clearly than others. But because they can't memorize addition and subtraction or multiplication tables, math itself is hard for them, even though they might get the concept. So what are some of the giftings of dyslexic children? they are more gifted in a lot of ways. Often they tend to be more artistic, more athletic, good mechanics because they can see in 3D. They often tend to be more gifted musically. They tend to be more intuitive. They just kind of know what's going on around them. They tend to have a very vivid imagination, very curious about the world, how things work. They want to know how things work. So that's an overview of dyslexia. If you suspect that you have dyslexia, or someone in your family has dyslexia, or one of your students has dyslexia, get them tested. Get them tested. There are people around that will test for dyslexia. I will say this, be sure to use an Orton-Gillingham based system, whatever that means, right? Just two people's names. Dr. Orton was a doctor back in the early 1900s that studied dyslexia. Gillingham was a lady who did a lot of research. And there's multiple well-known Orton-Gillingham-based systems out there. Slingerland, Alphabet Phonics, Alphabetic Phonics, Project Read, Wilson, Language with an exclamation point after it, and the Barton Reading and Spelling System. But find a tutor, find someone who can test for it. And get them help, because there is help available. They can learn to read. They learn differently than what we teach in schools, but they can learn to read. And again, I have some websites that we'll put up at the end. I want to move on to vision therapy. What are some signs that a child might have some vision problems, some vision tracking problems? If you look down at your paper in front of you, and then you look up at me, your eyes just automatically focus. They move from looking at this close thing to far away. And real quick. But for a child who, some children, their eyes struggle to do that. It's hard. It's hard work for them to focus. And so you might see a child straining to see the chalkboard or squinting, asking if they can sit in the front row, which children never do. Hold a book up close to their face, trying to see, struggling to keep up with the class. And sometimes they appear to be lazy because they don't want to read. And so we think they're just being lazy. And frankly, for a while with our son, we thought that's what was going on. He was maybe lazy because his room was always a mess too. But that's part of dyslexia, tends to go along with it. They might complain of frequent headaches, which you can imagine if your eyes are constantly having to work hard to focus, how tiring that would be. Cause headaches. It can be a struggle for them to pay attention, to focus. And with that tracking problem, often if they are reading, they'll be reading slowly, and they might be in the middle of a line and completely lose their place and not know where they were. And that's because they're straining to look at these words, and all of a sudden their eyes just can't take it anymore, and they unfocus, and when they come back again, they don't remember where they were. So they might stop in the middle of the line or slow down in the middle of the line. Sometimes they use their finger to help so that they can remember where they were. They tend to have poor hand-eye coordination, and my wife talked about our son that couldn't catch a ball. He just sort of batted at it, but he couldn't. I think that was at 6, and he still couldn't catch a ball. He should be able to catch a ball by the age of 6. The poor hand-eye coordination might be nearsighted or farsighted, or have some astigmatism to go with it. And I just want to show you the eye and talk a little bit about the eye. And what you may very well already know this. This is a cross-section of the eyeball, the human eyeball. And, of course, we have the cornea here, the lens, the muscles that focus the lens. The light comes in through here, through the lens, and the lens is supposed to focus it right here. I'm sorry, back here. And the nerves then carry that light, or the image that they see, to the optic nerve, which takes to the brain, and so forth. If you're nearsighted, it focuses too soon. If you're farsighted, it focuses it back here somewhere. And so we need corrective lenses to help with that. We already know this probably, but vision problems are also hereditary. If your parents both wear glasses, good chance you're going to need glasses sooner or later. My family, my dad wore glasses, my mom didn't, but all of us children either wear glasses or contact lenses. But the inability to focus properly, and sometimes children have trouble maintaining clear and single vision at a distance or close up for prolonged periods of time. And so again, this can slow down reading or copying from the blackboard. If your eyes have to work hard to focus every time, so you look up and I tell you to copy down this word. Well, you can't remember the whole word. And even if it's a sentence, you have trouble focusing on the whole sentence and copying it down. And so you might, you know, do a word at a time or a couple letters at a time, and it just takes a long time, and it's hard work, hard on your eyes, hurts your eyes, I should say. And again, it appears like laziness often, but it's not. It's not laziness. Our son, the same one that has dyslexia, has what we call amblyopia, which is a misalignment of the eyes. And so his eyes weren't even tracking together, weren't focusing together. And so it was, the eye doctor explained it as basically every time when he would look at a word, he had to focus on every letter and his eyes would unfocus. He had to focus on the next letter, his eyes would unfocus. Focus on the next letter. All the time. Can you imagine how slow you would read if you had to do that?
Just a little illustration the eye doctor did for that was take a paper that's in front of you with words on it and hold it about this close to your face.
About 3 inches.
And try to read the word on it. And just stare at that for a little bit. And does it make your eyes hurt? Okay, that's what our son was experiencing every time he tried to read.
Do that all day in school now.
Like, that hurts. That's why we thought he was lazy, because he would try to read and it would hurt. Wow, that makes my eyes feel really weird. It would hurt, and so he'd, you know, stop focusing on the paper, which is what we thought was laziness. Like, come on. And he'd say, then he finally started saying, my eyes hurt. And that clued us in.
And for him, it was a horizontal alignment. Things weren't aligned horizontally. And the human eyesight is supposed to be what we call single binocular vision. Bi means two, so both of your eyes focus on the same thing and you see a single image. If your eyes aren't focusing on the same thing, one's looking here and the other one's looking over here, you're going to see two images. Your brain can't handle that. And so it will shut off one eye or the other. Just doesn't see anything from that eye. And that's not good. Both eyes are supposed to be working together, focusing on the same thing. And it makes it very hard to read, see things. Another student in our school had a vertical alignment problem. She was actually seeing the world on a tilted axis. She would walk down the hall like this. Because to her, that looked level then. Especially going down steps. She had a hard time going down steps. And she would tilt her head to the side and try to do the steps. Because of a vertical alignment problem. She couldn't run. Steps were difficult. Playing games. She didn't want to play games at recess. She would just go kind of do her own little thing. And it's because she couldn't see things right.
And so sometimes we need corrective lenses to help the eye to focus where it should, help the lens focus where it should.
If a child has trouble with vertical alignment or horizontal alignment, sometimes you can put prisms in the lenses. And our one son actually has little prisms in his lenses. You can't see them, but they're there. And it just helps to sort of line things up. It doesn't correct anything, really, in his eyes, but it makes it so his eyes don't have to work so hard all the time to try to line things up, try to get things to work right. And so there's vision therapy that you can do that can be done. It tends to be expensive. But they can work at improving vision skills like eye movement control, eye focusing, coordination, two eyes working together. And if you see a child that has trouble with that, seems to have trouble with that, look for a pediatric optometrist. Pediatric optometrist, not an ophthalmologist, I think is the other word. A pediatric optometrist. And preferably one who does visual training and corrective lenses. And if you want more information about that, we have a doctor in our area who does that. And he actually gave me several of his business cards that he said we can hand out. And if anybody has questions, they can call me. And he'd be glad to talk to you. Need to move on to autism. See, I'm running out of time. Just a brief look at autism. Autism seems to be more and more common. What causes autism? Nobody really knows. I mean, some people think they know. But nobody really knows what causes it or how to cure it. Again, there's lots of opinions out there about this will fix it, that will. But it doesn't really know. Nobody really knows for sure. But you'll see more and more of autism in your school. We see more and more at our school. So what is autism? Well, they used to just have kind of one blanket word. It was called autism. And then they kind of divided into autism, and then there was Asperger's syndrome, which was sort of a mild form of autism. And now they've done away with all that and just said it's an autism spectrum disorder. And you might be anywhere on the spectrum from mild to moderate to... but there's another one. I can't remember now. Mild to moderate, something else, and severe. But it's a spectrum. And, of course, it comes in varying degrees. But what exactly is it? What are the signs and symptoms of autism? Well, autism affects the brain. It makes communicating and interacting with other people much more difficult, like just chatting with somebody, carrying on a little conversation with them. Hard to do that. Playing with others, spending time with others. People on the autism spectrum often have trouble talking and understanding language from an early age. And so if you have a child, and this is before they come to school, but a child who's 3 and still can't talk or hardly talks, okay, that's not normal. Doesn't necessarily mean that they have autism, but it might be something to think about, to check. Or if you have a child that comes into school at kindergarten or first grade and they can't talk on age level, that's a red flag. Again, doesn't mean that they have autism for sure, but possibly. Of course, children with autism or a level of autism, they have trouble interacting, and so playing games at recess, it's not going to happen probably. We had a boy in our school who was somewhere on that spectrum. He wouldn't play at recess. Send him out to recess, and he'd be off in the corner somewhere, off just kind of doing his own thing in his own little world, talking, singing, having a good time with himself. But he didn't interact with the others very well. As they become teens, people on the autism spectrum might have trouble discerning which clothes are cool and which ones aren't. They don't really know. You know, typically, teens begin to notice what other people wear and what's cool and what's not, and they want to make sure that they're cool and they fit in and they look right. And somebody with autism isn't even going to notice or care what they wear or how to play sports. They don't know. They don't really care. They don't want to. But not everyone on the spectrum, of course, has the same level. Some people with autism are especially good at music or computers or art, just like other teens, other people. About 40% of people with autism spectrum disorder have average or above average intelligence. The other 60% do have intellectual disabilities that range from mild to severe. Some children with autism can go to school with their peers and can get along. And the boy at our school, he would be going into sixth grade. He's done okay until he got to fifth grade. And fifth grade just didn't work. Actually, his parents hired tutors to come in and sit with him, right beside him in the classroom, to try to help him. And he sort of limped along, but I don't think he learned very much at all in fifth grade. And so they're going to do something else this year. But for a while, he could function in the classroom with his peers. Sometimes they won't look at you. If they're talking to you or you're talking to them, they can't make eye contact. It just makes them uncomfortable. Some of them won't even talk to you. Some of them, the really severe, don't even want to go where there's other people. So taking them to church, not going to happen. Not without a lot of screaming or. And it seems like the problem, part of the problem at least, is that they don't know how to express what they're feeling. They don't know if they know what's going on or what they're feeling, but they for sure can't express it. And so there's something going on inside, but they can't get it out. And it's frustrating for them. Doesn't mean they don't have feelings, they do. But it's more difficult for them to show those feelings or to understand the feelings of others. So what do you do with autism? There's no cure for it, but treatment can help. Treatment can make a big difference. There's therapy that can help people with autism learn language and life skills. Ways for them to develop socially so they can enjoy life unless they're really severe. It's usually diagnosed when a child's between 18 months and 4 years old. And the earlier, the better. Same way with dyslexia and vision therapy. The earlier, the better. The earlier you can catch it, the better. Partly because the brain isn't as formed, as developed when they're younger. Partly because of the social stigma that they tend to get. Just feeling like they're dumb or they don't fit. But they say that the brains of a child under 5, and again, this is before they come to school, but the brain of a child under 5 is especially adaptable and easy to mold, easy to work with. So you don't get them before 5 unless you have a pre-K class at your school. And most of us don't. And so till they come to you, they're past that. But again, the earlier the better. The earlier you can get some help for them. I want to put a couple websites up here on the whiteboard. That will be helpful if I can find them here. There you go. For dyslexia, www.bartonreading.com. Excellent website. And Susan Barton developed the Barton Reading and Spelling System. Very simple. She designed it specifically so that a parent could use it. You don't have to have any special training. You don't have to have a degree in reading or anything like that. You don't have to be a professional. Any of you could pick it up. There's training DVDs that come with it that you could watch. But on this website, she has about 4.5 hours of lectures. And that's the lectures that my wife was talking about at the beginning that she just could hardly stop watching because it fit our son so well. And when I watched him, I kept thinking about our son, but also kept thinking about, that looks like this child's school, and that looks like her. That looks like him. Boy, that, you know, and I kept seeing different students as she was talking about dyslexia. So that website's a good one. Another one. www.dys-ed.com.
There's the difference.
The website that I told you about had the free phonemic awareness test. dibbles.uoregon, University of Oregon, .edu. If you want any information on vision therapy, and I'm running out of room, I don't think I'm dyslexic. And this is Pennsylvania, but other states would have similar websites. If you would do a Google search, you could probably find it. But and actually, if you go to, that's A, I should have my wife doing this, AOA.org. Yeah, this is an A, too. The AOA stands for the American Optometry Association or something like that. And they would have lists of for other states as well, optometrists who would do vision therapy. And then there's another one. For autism, for information about autism, and I'll just write these over here. Autism Speaks. .org. Lots of good information there about autism, what it is, tips for teachers. I think that's the one that had the tips for teachers. The other one, Kids Health. .org. And I'll just say this maybe in closing. For some people, if they would find out that they have dyslexia or their child has dyslexia, it would be a blow. You mean my child is handicapped somehow? For us, it was actually a relief because you saw his report card, and we worked with him. We hired tutors to work with him. He went to a reading specialist. Sort of helped somewhat, but not really. Especially in fifth grade, you kind of ran into that brick wall, and we didn't know what to do. And finding some help was a great relief to us. So if you have children in your schools, and this seems to fit, try to get them some help. Talk to the parents. Talk to your principal. Try to get them some help. Yeah, the Barton system, and I think probably most of the other Orton-Gillingham-based systems, takes about a year and a half of tutoring to get them through. Of course, that depends on the child, how severe it is, how much help they've received beforehand. But typically, they say about a year and a half of tutoring. And they can read at grade level or above grade level when they get done with this. This works for adults, too. So even an adult who has dyslexia, all their life they couldn't read, couldn't spell, they can learn. So there's hope. There's help. Thanks for coming, and God bless you as you go, and love your students. Yeah.
One tip from Off the Haitian Facts. I wish I could remember what the book was called. I think it's Easy Multiplication. anyway, it's a book that you can get online, and it has a picture, the story for each one of the cases back. It works wonders.
And she said it's a book. She can't remember the title for sure. She thinks it might be Easy Multiplication Facts. But with each multiplication fact, it has a picture and a story for that fact. And so for a child who thinks in pictures, they can remember that picture. Oh, yeah, 3 times 3 is 9. Yeah, that's right. Remember that picture. It's great. Go ahead.
I use one called Times Tales.
Times Tales.
Is that the one? Oh,
okay.
Wonders.
Okay, Times Tales. Good.
And I actually kind of use it as an incentive. You knew as long as that's pretty good, but you just needed more time.
A little bit.
Be like, hey, if you're not the whole time, or you spend time doing this.
Good. That's good. Okay. Times Tales. Excellent. Yeah, and I have a couple books here, and they're both available down in the bookstore here at Faith Builders. Help for Billy. This isn't just for dyslexia. It's lots of good information. Excellent book, and Overcoming Dyslexia by Sally Shaywitz. Again, both available down there. Excellent books.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.